Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Campbell. I'm a doula in Washoe County, Nevada, a Medicaid provider, a lactation educator, childbirth educator, and mom of 18. You can find me and connect on doulainreno.com. Remember, give a shout out to those who are brave enough to share their stories with us on how they have become parents. Let's dive in. Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Campbell. Today, I'm with Kiri Mohan. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. It's actually a snowstorm here today. So the kids are home. I'm in Massachusetts.
Oh, I grew up in Rhode Island and Vermont. So
yeah, so right next door.
The New England winters. I know them well.
Yes. Yep.
Awesome.
Yep.
I would love for you to jump in and share your parenting journey with us.
Of course, happy to. So I started my parenting journey, well, what I believe is my parenting journey, in 2014. So 10 years ago, I had my first pregnancy and I was very excited. It was very much like, I think we're ready to have kids. Let's try. Bang, happened right away. And it was like, oh my God, this is so great. And I went in for an appointment, looked fine. The next appointment, no heartbeat. So very much one of those miscarriage stories. But first pregnancy, and I was 27, I want to say, 27. And so it was very devastating for me to be like so young when a lot of my friends, and I told everyone, you know, everyone. Yep. And then, didn't quite work out how I hoped. So that was the beginning. And I think that psychologically really was hard because I had these big plans to announce it to my parents at Christmas time. I did not tell them. Actually, they're the one set I didn't tell. So then I had a DNC. I decided to go the DNC route. And then we decided to try it again in a few months. And I got pregnant right away again. And I was so ecstatic. And then we made it through to the 12-week appointment. And I went in for an ultrasound. And even I could tell there was something wrong. And I'm not an expert by any means. But you know, like how people share that photo, that black and white photo of the baby. And I was looking at the ultrasound and I was saying, what, it doesn't look right. Like, it looks like there's like weird bubbles around the baby or something. It was actually its organs. They had not gone into the grown as they were supposed to at that point into the baby. They were outside externally of the baby. And then that began many, many appointments going into Boston, having to take half days, full days off. They didn't want to get terminated right away because they wanted to know what was going on. What was it? What was the diagnosis, I guess. So I had that, I blocked most of it out, but you know that long, thick needle that goes into your belly? That
amniocentesis? Amniocentesis?
No, I don't think, I started with a C, I feel like, but it's a big, it's dangerous if the baby's healthy, but baby wasn't healthy and they go in, there's a chance they could like by mistake kill the baby, but they had to grab a lot of the tissues to do the testing. Mm-hmm. And actually during this time, I realized like making up all these excuses all the time for why I was leaving. And I didn't want to share with my boss, who was a CEO and like, you know, middle-aged white dude that had no concept, no kids, no pets. And he just was like not sympathetic. I couldn't share my journey with him. And I actually started in this time my freelance business to get a better balance on being able to do what I wanted when I wanted, you know, with the appointments. It turns out the baby was going to be a stillborn. They diagnosed it with Wolff-Hirschhorn syndrome, which is a 1 in 60,000 chance of getting it. It's completely random.
Wow.
So I decided to do the termination, do another DNC. And by that point, they were saying, well, we don't know if you can have a healthy baby. We're not sure, you know, like maybe the first miscarriage was also this and we don't know. And I was just so, you know, heartbroken. I took some time off from trying. Then I tried again, got pregnant right away. And that time I had my daughter. And there's been no issues other than she's 7 going on 13 and super annoying. I mean that in a very loving way. But health-wise, she's totally fine. And that's been a parenting journey. And we decided to start trying for a second 3 years after we had her. And then nothing happened. And I was so confident. So confident, because every time I tried to get pregnant before, it happened right away. So, of course,
you were good at that part.
Yes. Yes, I was. Maybe not the full term part, but that part.
Yeah,
I was. And then nothing happened. And for years, And finally, we decided to explore IVF. And here's the crazy part. We decided to explore IVF. I committed to doing finally the IVF. And the month before getting all the medicine and the drugs, I said, you know what? I'm going to go. I don't know what the right way to say this is. Am I allowed to say something inappropriate? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, okay. I was like, I'm going to go balls to the walls. And I'm going to try every single thing out there this last month before IVF. And so I did like meditations. I did manifestation stuff. I did yoga for pregnancy. I did everything possible. And the day they call me, they say, hey, we have you as you're getting your period today. You need to come in and start the IVF rounds. I was like, I haven't gotten it. And I checked and I was pregnant. And so that was probably the weirdest story out of all the other ones, because I finally had gotten pregnant after trying for like 3-something years. And so now I have 2 children. I think that's going to be it. But my parenting journey definitely began 10 years ago with the first miscarriage, and just psychologically working through the 2 failed pregnancies to having children, and then having secondary infertility and working through that.
I want to go back to those first 2 pregnancies, because a miscarriage can be such a, like you said, like you tell people you're excited and it's such a blow. I know lots of women, myself included, I felt like, you know, my body was failing me. Like this normal, natural thing that should be no big deal to do is a really big deal to do. It's really hard and doesn't just click. How'd you work through that first one? And then, holy cow, the second one. I mean, can you talk to me a little bit about that? Like, there's a lot of emotion. And, oh, by the way, you quit your corporate job and started freelancing on the side, which can be like a huge transition in and of itself when nothing else is going on, and scary. And are you financially going to be able to support things like you could, and all the things. So I'd like to dive more deeply into some of that, because there had to be a lot going on for you.
There was. I think after the first miscarriage, just because I didn't expect that being so young, and doctors saying like, you know, you don't really have to worry about that. You're 27. Like, miscarriage is unlikely. Psychologically, I was grieving a lot, like a lot, especially around Christmas time, because that was when I was supposed to announce it to the world. And that was just bad timing. And to this day, when I hear that song, Where Are You Christmas by Faith Hill, that was the song that I played over and over again, because I didn't feel in the Christmas spirit. I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm so exhausted from going through the miscarriage and everything I had to do. And the second one was harder. The second one was harder because even miscarriage, you can kind of rationally somehow make it make sense in your brain, even though you're like, why did my body do this? You're like, you know, it happens to 20 to 30% of women. And that doesn't mean I can't get pregnant again. And you could somehow trick yourself through it. But the second one was just, did I make the right choice? What if the baby would have been okay? Probably not. But, you know, you tell yourself, like, what if I would have had a miracle baby and the baby would have been okay? Should I have gotten rid of it? Because the baby was alive and it was essentially an abortion, even though it was medically recommended. And that was really hard. And for many months, I just ignored that decision. And then I remember thinking to myself, what you resist persists. And I was thinking, I have been ignoring this big thing that I did in my life, which was get rid of a baby that, okay, was not medically healthy, but was still alive and very much wanted. Like, we wanted to have that baby and we got rid of it. And that was, once I worked through those emotions, I found myself in a much better place and ready to try again. And squeezing that, like, quitting the corporate job, looking back, I mean, it was obviously the best decision for my life, but it was a lot going on. And I think it was a risk, because at that time I was like, wow, all these appointments, I'll have to go on my husband's health insurance and I won't have health insurance. But at that time I realized, like, I don't ever want to be in a situation again where I feel like I can't. It's like a very loose way to say I can't be myself, but I can't. I feel confined and trapped and unable to express what's going on in my life. Like, this was so big. And I did talk to HR very surface level about it, just in case something was brought up, they had to know. But just the fact that I had to always, it was draining to be going through the decisions to terminate the baby, waiting. I had to wait 3 to 4 weeks for test results, for chromosomal genetic testing, all this stuff. And at the same time, still have a baby alive in me starting to show and being like, God, is this something I'm going to have to get rid of? Like, I'm starting to show. What do I do? And then I was going into Boston like once or twice a week for the testing and for the meetings. And they actually wrote a white paper on my pregnancy, apparently, which is really cool.
That is really cool.
I thought that was interesting because it was so random, and it was also a boy, and more likely happened to girls. Like, that was hard too, like knowing it was a boy. And then you start just having to work through that. And sometimes I look back, I'm like, was quitting my job part of this like emotional hormonal reaction and doing this freelance thing? But at the same time, I think it was the best decision. And that was almost minor compared to all the other bigger emotional things I was doing. And I had been like tampering and freelancing for a while. So it's not like it was like, okay, I'm just gonna quit my job. Bye. It was like, I had some, like a little bit of a client base. I had been dabbling in it. I'd been exploring it while all of this was going on. So again, not drastic. Bye job. I'm gonna try this out a little different.
Which is great. And that's a great way to describe it, because in my mind, that's like, okay, you just made this massive shift career-wise in the midst of all of this. And for you, was there a difference in the DNCs, like physically? Because you were further along. Yeah.
Yes, good question. So the second one, because there's no heartbeat and the baby was already dead, I bled for about a week afterwards physically. And then I had like 6 weeks of like no bleeding at all. And then all of a sudden I got my period again. The second one, I bled for 4 weeks straight. And I was like, when is this going to go away? And then I remember I had like 3 days of a reprieve, and then I got my period. So I basically was bleeding for like 5 weeks. It was complete opposite. Okay. And the changes, because I think your body, when you're holding like a baby that's not alive, is very different. Like, I had stopped getting hungry. My pregnancy symptoms had been going away. But with the second pregnancy, my body still, there was still a living baby. It was feeding continuously and still trying to support. So when that was taken out at 15 weeks, it was just like, bam, it was like a crash and a change. And there was so much going on. It took a long time to feel, quote unquote, normal again.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a big differentiation. Did you say how many weeks you were with the first one?
The first one, when I got the DNC, I was... By that point, I was 9 weeks, but they think the heartbeat stopped at seven.
Six or seven. I mean, just that gestation between that 7 to 9 to 15. I mean, that's a big difference in development and how you feel. And you're in a second trimester pregnancy now, not a first trimester pregnancy anymore. So yeah, huge difference. And the decision, I mean, the first time the decision was removed from you, there's nothing you can do. I've been in that same situation where you're like, I mean, it's not like there was a plan B. There wasn't. This is it. We're there. And you either miscarry on your own or have assistance with it. But the second time, way different, way different. So I feel,
and they even told us there, you know, there's an option the baby could live, but then they would be on life support, you'd be caregivers, and babies with this Wolf-Hirschhorn syndrome generally don't live past age 5 to 7. So then you're like, oh my God, like, of course we want this baby, we want, but like, and I came from a very religious upbringing where like abortion was very no-no, even in this kind of situation. But they were like, most likely you'd have a stillborn. Most likely this baby around 6 to 8 months would be a stillborn and you'd have to deliver a stillborn. And I was like, all these scientific facts and figures thrown at you. And you, in the little back of your mind, you're like, but what if this is a miracle baby and everything works out? What if? Most likely not. But you can't help having those little thoughts that go through your head. And it's just so difficult. It was such a difficult decision.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I haven't had to make it, so I can't be a judge of that. I know what you mean about like the baby's alive and you're making this decision, but I mean, I can't imagine how hard that decision would be. And I think regardless of the direction you go, it's going to be a really challenging decision and you have to live with the consequences. And like,
exactly. Yeah.
You have two options here. Tell me about your freelance business, because I know that that came up during that time, and then take us through the next couple of years between then and when your daughter was born.
Yeah. So I guess It wasn't even really a few years. I started freelancing, dabbling in it really in 2013, 2014, before I started getting pregnant. I was like, this is interesting. I can work from home. I can do what I do normally. And then when I decided to take it full time, it was a little bit of a rough decision because I was going to be making less than I was at my corporate job and going on my husband's health insurance. So he would be making less than his paycheck, but it freed up all this time to now do these doctor's appointments. And I had this thing in my head, like this fear, like, okay, I might not be able to have a healthy baby. I want to keep trying. But what does this mean for my future and my schedule? It means more doctor's appointments. It means, what if I decide to do adoption? Like all these things. I was like, holding a job, totally, I can do it. Do I want to have that constant need to ask like for time off when I'm not sick? I don't know if I want to do that. So we made the decision. And then, of course, my daughter was totally fine, full term, but I still had a lot of appointments due to my past. But the freelance business, it really started to take off when I was able to completely invest my time and my effort into it as opposed to being at my corporate job. Now what I do is I actually coach women who are trying to find that balance in life to try to have time with their kids, to have that freedom where they can do what they want and not be working full time or reporting to someone. I don't think I answered your question directly because I don't know how much you want me to go into it. But I do think it was the best decision because it set up this life that now my daughter, when I had her, I didn't have to drop her off at daycare every day. To be fair, I did end up going the daycare route. Because I
Oh, I'd
needed,
love to
I,
talk about that too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've done every daycare out there. I've done in-home nannies, I've done in-home daycare, and I've done daycare centers with both my kids because I like to have at least 1 to 2 days a week where I can completely the entire day focus on my business. In the beginning, I was like, I will work at home and have my kid at home and work during naps. My daughter was an angel. She was very scheduled. There was nothing wrong with that. I just got very frustrated easily with the broken up. And then the
Yes.
adjustments, you know, having a child. Oh, now they're taking 2 naps a day, but now they're taking 1 nap a day. And now they decide to sleep 45 minutes. And the next day it's 3 hours. It was just too much inconsistency for me. So I ended up deciding to do in-home daycare with her twice a week for a full day. So that's what I did with her. With my son, we did nannies for a while. And then now he's in a daycare center 2 days a week. So I did the same kind of thing. I need to have 2 days where I'm completely working. And then the other days I have my children home with me. Well, my daughter's in school now. So that's
Yeah,
a little different.
right. I mean, I think it's great to point out the fact that just because you're running a business from home doesn't mean that your needs are a whole lot different than when you left the house and you went the corporate route. You still really need to focus. I mean, I homeschooled my kids off and on, but the reason I was able to write a book is because I wrote between 9 and 2:30 when they were at school. Like I'm the same way. I needed to have a plan and a schedule and a certain way to do things. I couldn't just wing it here and there or take bite-sized pieces here and there. I don't have the bandwidth really to do that, just like you're explaining. And women who do, I'm like, kudos, because like I want to be really present with one thing or another thing, and I can't be split like that. So I love that you tried all kinds of different ways to make it work and figured it out and realized that 2 days was enough. 2 full days uninterrupted was enough. I think women need to hear that, you know, I feel like we believe that if we're running a business from home, we have this freedom over our schedule, which is true. But that doesn't mean it's going to work for you. You do have the freedom, but
Well, let me tell
maybe.
you, Jen, I battled with guilt deciding to put my daughter
Right?
in-home daycare because I was like, I started this whole freelance business to have this freedom and flexibility, which you'd still have. But I thought when I had kids, that meant that I could work while they were at home. But I realized again, I needed that uninterrupted time. And I actually really liked making a lot of money. And in order to make that a lot of money, I needed more hours in my day. And I did not want to work at like 9 p.m. to midnight. That is not me. I'm not
No.
a night person. So
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I need to have those hours. And in order to have those hours, she needs to be out of the house. It's
Yeah.
the way it goes.
I feel that. I feel that. And I'm not a night person either. So again, women who can do things a certain way, I think that that's amazing. But it never worked for me either. I just couldn't, my brain couldn't do it. You got pregnant with your daughter. How afraid were you during that pregnancy?
Oh, terrified. So when I talk to people who've had a miscarriage now, and I'm trying to be a support, we all say it robbed us of joy when we have our next pregnancies. And if I could change it, well, if I could change anything, I'd change a lot. But I really wish, if I could somehow flip everything, that I didn't have my miscarriage and my other pregnancy first. Because those, just every pregnancy after the two live full term, my children, I've never had a joyful pregnancy. I've never had a pregnancy where I can just be in it and enjoy it and really love it, because I've been so scared of losing. And interestingly, the two full term births I've had, I bled at 6 weeks with both of them. Yet the first two I had, the miscarriage and the one that had the defects, no bleeding, totally fine. So the emotional experience when my daughter's pregnancy, when I started bleeding at 6 weeks, and it was like I needed a pad. I was like, oh my God, I'm losing the baby again. She was fine. And then my son, same thing, 6 weeks, started bleeding. And I couldn't even talk. I was like, it's okay. You remember your daughter? You had this happen with your daughter. And I was like, no, I'm losing him. It's been so many years since I've been pregnant. I haven't been able to, you know, I had the secondary infertility. Of course I'm going to lose him. I didn't. But like that on top of like the history just makes it so hard for me to enjoy a pregnancy and want to be pregnant. And I feel like I kind of ignored it. People be like, have you set up a room yet? Have you done these things? And I didn't do those things until like the last minute, like the last month and a half, because I was so scared of losing the baby again.
Yep.
Even when everything looks fine.
Well, I mean, it is hard because you don't want the rug to be pulled out from under you and have to go through the same situation again. You had loss and then loss with a really difficult decision. And what are the odds of having a 1 in 50,000? Well, you know, it doesn't matter. The odds were that low the first time. So,
yeah,
you know, I get it. I mean, rainbow babies are tough, you know, having a baby after loss. And that's why there's so much joy once they're here, once they're born, because it's kind of like, okay, we did it. We did that one. That one's great. We made it. Mm-hmm. We made it to the finish line. So I imagine that your pregnancies would have been just emotionally draining because of that fear of something going wrong, of not knowing.
And can we touch briefly on the jealousy you have of other women who have it easy? Or even if they don't have it easy, even if you don't have it, like I saw a woman in the supermarket who was pregnant and I was like so angry at her. Like I don't even know who she was. But that's like a facet that like is really hard to get through that I think not enough women talk about. It's like, oh, I'm so happy I'm finally pregnant. But those feelings that you have jealousy of over the other people who have it so easy doesn't go away when you get pregnant. I still would see other women pregnant and be like, you have no idea how easy you have it. And this like spiteful little greed monster would come out. And I'd be like, here, you are pregnant. You are finally pregnant. And you're like far along. Why are you angry at this person who has no control over their body? Just like you have no control over your body. But it's just something that is always there. And even now, and I'm done having kids now, but sometimes when I have a friend who will, you know, be like, I'm pregnant with my third magic. And I'm like, oh, like you're so lucky and you have no idea.
That part is hard. That's really hard. And also that women don't talk about it, because I think the stories of loss are more common than we realize, or the story of infertility, or the story of like, of being scared through your whole pregnancy. I think that those are more common stories than we realize, but because we aren't talking about them, that woman pregnant in the store might be looking at you pregnant thinking the exact same thing, but women don't know because we don't have those conversations. And I will never understand why we don't just have those conversations, you know, why we can't just say, I look at you pregnant and think about how easy you have it. And it makes me feel happy for you. And at the same time, like, spiteful and angry, and then I feel guilt, and then I feel shameful for having those feelings. And like it's a spiral, right? Where the other woman was like, could look at you and say, oh my gosh, I felt the same way, but we don't know because we just don't talk about it. And I think that that's really normal. It's normal to be You know, when I had a friend who was single for a while, and she's like, how is it everyone else found someone wonderful and is struggling through a relationship? And here I am, single on Christmas again. And, you know, I mean, when you're in a hard place, you're just in a hard place, and you don't think that anybody understands how hard of a place it is. But that's a hard place to be. The secondary infertility, that, I mean, at the one thing you did really well was got pregnant
fast. I know. Yes.
Like, you, it may not go well after that, or things may go sideways or whatever, but you did that part well. So on your last pregnancy, that had to add insult to injury.
It was, I don't know what was harder. Sometimes I like think, I remember being in those 3 years, 2.5, 3 years, and being like, what's harder, this, when watching all my friends get pregnant with their second and third, or going through all the issues? And I'm like, I don't know, because at least last, I felt like with the miscarriage and the second pregnancy with the defects, I feel like there was always hope that, like, okay, well, I'm getting pregnant really quickly, so there's hope that the next one will work out. With this, I mean, and I'm sure listeners can understand and relate, the ones that are going through infertility month after month, and all of a sudden you realize, I only have 12 chances a year to get pregnant. That's not a lot. And then month after month goes by and you're like, maybe next month. But like, the hope was different. It was a lot harder to hold on to hope with the secondary infertility and think that, like, and then for me, there was the feelings of like, well, you have one healthy child, you should be happy. You were really begging for one healthy child before, and you have one, so why do you want this? And just, oh, all these things in your head all the time. Why can't you be happy? What's wrong with this one child you have? You really wanted this one child. It was hard. It was hard.
Yeah.
Really hard.
And you did almost 3 years of that. 3 years of, oh, maybe next month. Oh, maybe next month. Oh,
yes.
Okay, maybe next month. That gets wearing over time too.
Yeah, it really does. And you just kind of like, oh, I guess I got 3 more chances this year before the next year. And then I got 12 more chances. I kept going back to this 12 chances, because all of a sudden it was like, that is not a lot. That is not a lot of moments during the year that I can get pregnant.
And my understanding with a woman with a normal cycle, of those 12, like, you're normal perfectly, you're 28 days, that you're probably, your chance of pregnancy are probably only 10 out of those 12. And I remember hearing that at one point and being like, what? Why are we even trying to do this? This is the stupidest thing ever. But,
well, you know, it's interesting. My cycle did change after I had my daughter. So I think that played into it. And I didn't realize how much it played into it. I was a very, like, before then, it was like 30 days on the dot, like, regular since I was 12 years old. But then after I had my daughter, about 2 years after her, it changed significantly. And it was like, maybe it'll be a 21-day cycle. Maybe it'll be 22. Maybe it'll be 25. Maybe it'll be 28. I don't know. And it was always changing. And I went to acupuncture a lot for it. I think the acupuncture helped, but it was like 3 or 4 months of it before I got pregnant with my son. And she gave me herbs along with it, and that helped regulate the cycle a little bit. So that could have gone into it.
I want to talk about that last couple of months when you were like, balls to the wall, we're all out.
Yes.
Before IVF, yeah. Let's do everything we can. So acupuncture was one thing. Herbs was another thing. Meditation, you said, was another thing.
Did. So I did two different things. Like, I had these like meditations where I would actually like do the manifestation, where I would like meditate that I was already pregnant, like it already happened, I had a baby, and I would do that. I also did something called, there's this woman on YouTube, totally recommend her, Yoga Yin, Y-I-N, and she does very specific yoga for very specific cycle issues and fertility issues. And so I was able to find the ones that matched exactly with like what I was experiencing with my cycle being all over the place, and did that yoga every single day when I could. So at least 4 to 5 times a week. And I did these, like, my friend sent me these novenas. She's Catholic. I would do these novenas every morning for having a, I just did everything possible. Cause I was like, you know what? I'm doing IVF anyway, so let's just go balls to the walls. Let's just try everything. And it was probably like a month and a half. Like, acupuncture I'd been doing for a while, but like those meditations, the yoga and all that, that was the last month and a half. And I got pregnant. I don't know if it was a combination or if it was like the acupuncture finally working? I don't know. Because I have another friend and she tried that stuff and it didn't work for her and she did IVF. So you don't know. But
no, you don't. But it's good
I
that
figured,
you tried everything.
Why not
new?
Try everything, right? What do I have to lose? This is the way I looked at it.
I think that that's more the point, that if also acupuncture and the herbs, if you're doing things that are making you more calm and relaxed and bringing your body better health, like acupuncture and herbs, then those aren't bad things anyway that can support a pregnancy, even if it ended up being IVF. So, I mean, like, you're right. Why not? Then you get pregnant and then scared all over again.
Had the 6 weeks bleeding session.
Yep.
And it was just like, man, I really hope this one sticks, because if it doesn't and I have to go back to like either IVF or doing months and months and months of trying, that's going to be really, really hard. So that entire, thankfully, I didn't have anything else going on in the background, like quitting a job or anything like that. That was just very like straightforward. Once I got past the 6 weeks of that 6 week bleeding point, once I got past that, I was fine. And there were nothing went on with that pregnancy that was unusual, but I still had trouble finding that joy. I still struggled with acknowledging it. That pregnancy was also, for some reason, I was very negative. There's something with the hormones. Like my daughter's pregnancy, I wasn't. This one, I was. I was either neutral or negative. I wasn't laughing much. I wasn't finding joy. It was just hard. It was a harder one emotionally. I was just meh.
I know your husband's not here. I'm not asking you to speak for him, but kind of. How was this? Has he expressed how this whole process of these four pregnancies was for him? Did it change your relationship a lot?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The first two, I think, were hard for him because it was hard for him to watch me go through that. There's like a lot of up and downs with hormones, emotions, your body, the changes that your body goes through. Those were hard for him because he felt bad for me. And I think he also, when we were having trouble conceiving my son, he was very much like, I'm quite happy the way things are. I don't want to get stressed about this. It shouldn't be a stressful thing. And I was like, oh, I really want a second child. He was more, I think the first two pregnancies affected him so much in the way that he's like, I don't want to go through like all this stress again. So why can't we just be happy having our daughter, if that's what it is? Which was hard because I felt guilty. Like, of course I'm happy that I have my daughter. Of course I'm very at peace with that, but I'm not. At the same time, he was just more on the camp of like, things are good. Why do we need to push our luck?
Right. I just think it's so much bigger, you know, when it's affecting your entire family. And then you had a daughter who was 4-ish when you got pregnant. And so are they 5 years apart? 4 years
They're
apart?
Almost 6 years apart.
Okay.
Actually, yeah, she had her fifth birthday the month I got pregnant.
Okay. So, I mean, which for you has been really good. You said you like having the age
I
gap.
Do.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't what I originally planned, but I really like that I get to have a lot of one-on-one time with my son.
Yes.
If they were closer together, it would have been a lot more of them always together. But now I get to experience again that one-on-one time with him because I have him home with me certain days of the week. And
right.
I get to read those books and do that more relaxed lifestyle that I had with my daughter.
I love that. Kyria, I want to end with you talking about, I really feel like your coaching business speaks a lot to where moms are, where maybe they're not working or they're working a corporate job they don't love and they feel kind of torn, not necessarily even with all the appointments, just with parenting and bringing in money. And you really help in that niche of these women who want to take control of their schedule and be able to earn money. Can we end kind of speaking to, I guess, your ideal client or a success story or in some way, can you bridge that gap and we can end on that very happy note?
Yes. Yes. So I do work specifically with women who have a corporate past. So even if you're not working right now, you're a stay-at-home mom, but you have that corporate past, and you're ambitious and you miss your career, you miss working and you feel like that gives you purpose, then those are the type of women I love to work with, because I can teach you how to build a successful freelance business. So I don't teach the skills, right? That's also why I like teaching corporate women, because they might have this marketing background or communications background or assistant background or whatever it is. You have those skills. I can teach you to bring it online and make six figures while only working 25 hours or less a week with my strategy. So it's those kind of women who are willing to put in the time, who are ambitious, who are like, I want to get back and have a career, have that purpose in my life. I teach them either through my course, which they can buy directly, or through coaching and group coaching or one-on-one coaching. So that's the woman that I work with.
I love that.
They are great. They are great. I love watching people. I do work with men if there are men listening. I'm working with a male right now, but you do have to apply, and I have more conversations with you before jumping in. But I love seeing the light bulbs go off and working with women who might have dabbled in it like I did. And they're like, wow, I can do this instead. And then I can change my business to do this. And now, oh my gosh, I have all this time back in my life. I can spend that time with my kids. I don't have to be, you know, a slave to my business, which is what often happens when women get buy into the dream of, oh, I can do this freelance business and I can have my kids at home and I can make lots of money. And then all of a sudden they're working all odd hours and they're stressed and they're tired. I just teach them how to eliminate that and really focus and use their skills to their best advantage.
Kiri, thank you so much for being on. Wow, what a story. Thank you so much for sharing.
I really appreciate sharing it with your audience. And I hope if anyone wants to reach out to me and commiserate or need just a little support, if you've gone through any of the pregnancy situations I have, please say hi. I'm most active on LinkedIn,
okay.
But I would love to be a support to any woman.